Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Women's World Cup post-game show for the United States as they defeat the Colombians by a final of 2-0. As the United States will move on to the quarterfinals of the Women's World Cup and take on China. This coming Friday, having some technical difficulties at the moment, getting into the studio right now. So one second as I get my guests on with me, as we get ready here. Let's see if I can do it this way. I think I can. Yes, I can. There we go. And there we have it. We have on at the moment Miss Paulina Sterzelec, once again, formerly of the sports stats style website. Now she's full-time with the New York Red Bulls, but of course she knows her soccer very, very well, and very soon we'll get Carter Krishnar on from World Soccer Talk to join us. But Paulina, it was I think it was a solid performance, but maybe a couple of question marks here and there. What did you see from this match tonight?
Well, first, hi. You know, I was really impressed with the U.S. for the first 5 minutes. This is, I think, the first game I watched from them this World Cup where I was like, they're going to get a really early goal. And then I think it kind of just slowed down. And until Alex scored that goal, did they really pick it back up again? For me, the biggest problem is Alex and Abby connecting. We just really haven't seen that. And I think that's something they really need to figure out before they go into the next game, especially since they're going to be down a player with Megan Rapinoe, to me, which is their biggest loss 100%. I think Rapinoe has been outstanding this World Cup thus far. She's a smart player, and it was just really terrible seeing her get that yellow card. I never thought, you know, being such a smart player, I never thought she would get that second yellow card. I saw the foul there. I don't know if I saw it as a yellow card. So to me, that's a huge, huge loss for the U.S.
Yeah, I agree there. To be honest with you, I thought Rapinoe, I thought that was like a regular foul. I didn't think it was a yellow card foul at all. But unfortunately, she, along with Holiday, will miss the next match for the United States. And once again, unfortunately, it's a situation where you really don't want to discuss the referees all the time, but unfortunately you're going to have to, because why? Very simple. Unfortunately, I think these referees haven't been doing a good job at all. And once again, it's nothing their decision-making. It's not so much just the decision-making. They just haven't had enough matches. And I think we all know, and no offense at all, I mean, we all know that in this game, the men's game makes the world go round. I mean, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but there's not enough women's leagues at this particular point in time outside the U.S., maybe a couple in Europe, maybe one or two in South America, maybe Mexico as well, not sure. But, you know, I think our women referees, whether it's the main referee in the middle, the fourth official, or the assistants down the sides, Paulina, I think they need more, not so much it's coaching, but game shapeness and sharpness.
I can agree with that. I think definitely today they weren't afraid to pull out that, you know, yellow card. And I think sometimes you just got to really let the players play. I didn't see it being a yellow. I think, like you said, I think it was a regular foul. I did not see that yellow card necessary. So I think your, you know, argument totally supports that. And sometimes you just got to let the players play. If it's a really, you know, a foul where you really need to call the yellow or you need to call the red, okay. But sometimes they're just really too quick to pull that card out. And I think it takes away a lot from the game, you know. And then you see calls where they don't get called, and you kind of think to yourself, well, why didn't this call get called? So, or why didn't this play get called? So I do 100% agree with you on that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the U.S. regroups going into this next round.
Absolutely. Joining us now is Kartik Krishnaiyer from World Soccer Talk. And, Kartik, obviously the two goals that were scored in the beginning of the second half, those are vital goals. The Colombian players, they lose their keeper on a foul on the edge, just on the white line of the area. I thought that's the right call. It was a penalty because I remember Shep Messing once said, even if you're on the white line of the area, that still constitutes as a penalty. And that's the right call for me, and it was the right call for a penalty. But the United States, the women, they move on against China against China in the quarterfinals. How did you see this one?
The penalty was the right call, absolutely. Although I have seen officials throughout the world sometimes give a yellow card in that situation to the goalkeeper. So that maybe Colombia doesn't get reduced to 10 women, and it's kind of punitive, right? Because it's a double jeopardy thing. The penalty, you know, having missed the penalty, and it's sending off. And Colombia was hanging on for dear life. Oh, there were some genuine moments of quality from the Colombian team, but they were always going to, as it got later in the second half, try and pack it in, play defensively, play tactically, to try and get through this game. Some of the same issues for the U.S. I mean, some of the issues we were concerned about before the World Cup, some of the things that we were really concerned about heading into the Algarve Cup, and then we got a succession of good results, including beating France in that tournament, which was very surprising to me. The France game, the best I've seen this U.S. team perform under Jill Ellis. But I have a number of concerns about this team, particularly in the midfield. I think Lauren Chaney will be out for the next game. She got another yellow today, and so will Rapinoe. So we're going to see some changes in that midfield. But Carly Lloyd has not had a good tournament, and I don't know if it's turf. I don't know if it's an accumulation of other things. We haven't seen her take the kinds of shots from distances we're accustomed to seeing her take. Although she took one today late in the match after she got off the mark with that penalty, but she's given the ball away a lot. We're seeing some bad giveaways out of the back. Tobin Heath hasn't impressed me in this tournament. I don't know where Heather O'Reilly is. I'm wondering if there's some reason why we haven't seen her yet in this tournament. One of the most versatile U.S. players, a player I think could really add a lot in wide areas. And with Rapinoe out, though, for the next game, we might see O'Reilly. Jill Ellis would be forced to play her. Really disjointed play between the midfield and the attacking players. There's a lot of concern I have about this U.S. team going forward. I think at the back, though, we've been very good. Julie Johnson has been the standout player of this tournament. Hope Solo has been great in goal. We know she's the best goalkeeper in the world. She's shown that again in this tournament. And Allie Krieger has been playing out of her mind as well, as she did in the 2011 World Cup. So I think we can take some solace in how we're playing at the back, but I'm not happy with the midfield play. I'm not happy with the creativity in midfield. The finishing has been generally pretty poor. And we're going to have to play better if we're going to get by the winner of France and Germany. I mean, I think either of those teams, even though, as I said, we beat France in the Algarve Cup, either of those teams right now, to me, look like they're better than the United States.
I definitely agree with you there, Kartik. I mean, there are still some things that can be improved for the women to move forward. I mean, obviously China is more, I would say, maybe tough. And at the same time, Paulina, for China, sometimes they'll disguise what they're going to try and do. I mean, obviously they have a set formation, but you don't know what the Chinese are going to do when you face against them. And I remember in the past, those past Women's World Cup matches or international matches, these friendlies, China would always match strength for strength. I think this time around, China's a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I think there's going to be just a lot of regrouping that really needs to happen before this game. And just to kind of add on, I really have been very underwhelmed with Abby. You know, I think there was a lot of debate going into this World Cup. with her taking time off from her regular season to focus on this World Cup, would that hurt her and how would that affect her? And to me, she has completely not impressed me whatsoever. You know, I just want to see Abby Wong back on the field, and I haven't seen her yet. So her being taken out earlier today, getting some rest, you know, we know she's going to start. We assume at least she's going to start on Friday. And I think her and Alex really need to really click going into Friday so they can find the back of the net and so they can make that connection between them that we're so used to seeing and that I think a lot of people expected to see in the earlier stages of this World Cup.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I've been very, very critical of Abby Wambach myself, guys. You know, she not only did a disservice to her team, she did a disservice to herself, Kardik. And the truth is that, I mean, I understand she wants to avoid injury. She wants to play in the World Cup. But, you know, all the training in the world, all the fitness in the world, you know, they're going to be put out there and you're going to try your best. But it doesn't substitute for true game shapeness. And when we talk about game shapeness, Kardik, we're talking about actually being in real game situations. She could have asked to be a substitute before the World Cup to her club side. Instead, what does she do? She just says, I'm going to throw everything away, and I'm just going to concentrate on the World Cup. And while she is running well, and she's doing a great job going hustling her rear end up and down the field, the truth of the matter is this, that she's not game shape. And that's what's hurting her, and it's hurting the national team and the opportunity to win a World Cup.
Yeah, I would agree with that to a certain extent. I mean, I think you guys are both right about Abby not being match sharp, not playing like the Abby Wambach we've watched. I mean, I've watched her since she was in college. And so, I mean, I watched her at the University of Florida, and her and Heather Mitz on that team, actually, together. She's not herself. She's not match sharp. I know she didn't want to play on the turf in Rochester this year. That's part of the reason she didn't, which is, of course, her hometown. She didn't want to play with Western New York this year because of that. But I also think she's not necessarily getting the kind of service from the midfield that she needs. That's not an excuse. I mean, I completely agree with you. She's off the mark. And, of course, if someone's going to win us this World Cup, chances are it is going to be Abby Wambach because she's Abby Wambach. She's one of the greatest players in the history of this sport. Women's soccer history, she's one of the great ones. We saw another great one in Martha have a terrible World Cup. And it's funny, the two highest profile players in the world, the two biggest players in the world, the two best players in the world historically, Abby and Martha, both are having a tough time. And is part of it the turf? Yeah, but I guess everybody's had to play on the turf. I mean, I've made the turf excuse for Carly Lloyd, actually, because I've noticed some of her touches have been poor, and she's not moving quite the way she typically does. She's not taking the shots from distance that she normally does, partly because of the turf. But everybody's having to play on the turf, and Abby is Abby's hustling. She's playing hard, but she's just not match sharp. I would agree with that. And there are other options for the United States, but there is no other player in women's soccer globally that can do the things Abby Wambach can do when she's on. And if the U.S. is going to win this World Cup, it's going to have to be with her playing a central role, being that tough target player in the area, scoring goals, or creating space for Alex Morgan to score goals, or for Christian Press to score goals, or for Carly Lloyd to score goals. So she has to improve. That's one of several areas where the U.S. has to improve if we're going to get past Germany or France, because right now I don't see us beating either of those two teams.
And I agree.
Absolutely. And I totally agree on that. I think just the biggest question now is, does she have enough time to improve? You know, we're going to need her against China. We have two very key players out, so we're going to need her. And is she going to be ready almost on time to do so? And like you said, it's not the Abby we're used to seeing. Like some of the balls that she has been getting, some of those 4 years ago would have been goals. So I think it's just a matter is she going to be ready to, you know, switch into that Abby we kind of need her to be. And I 100% agree, if this U.S. team is going to win a World Cup, Abby's going to play a very big role in it. But is she going to be ready on time to do so?
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember in the 2008 Olympics in Beijing when Abby got hurt before the tournament, and I mean, I was one of the people who said, oh, you know what, that's it, we're done. I mean, we're not, well, we had beaten the World Cup the previous year by Brazil, remember, horribly in the semifinals, the controversial game where Hope Solo was dropped from Brianna Scurry, played in goal. I thought, it's over for us. We can't win without her. And it was actually Carly Lloyd in the midfield who stepped up in that tournament and dominated that tournament and led us to a gold medal. If Abby is not going to perform, someone else on this team has to step up, other than Megan Rapinoe, who's out for the next game, because she's been the one to this point. And I don't know who that is, and I completely agree with you. We're seeing enough service. I'm complaining about the service to Abby, but we've seen enough balls in the area where 4 years ago she scores those goals, and the U.S. is winning these games comfortably. So there's something not right.
Well, then here's the question, then, if something's not right, and we'll go with Paulina first and Kardik, does Jill Ellis need to change up her tactics? Does she need to change it up and maybe be a little bit more attacking down the flanks? I know Tony DiCicco made this observation, even though I think he went a little overboard with it, saying she's devaluing, which I think is a little harsh. But do we need to attack more down the flanks than go down the middle? Paulina, you first.
Does Jill change it? I don't know. I think that's a very loaded question in the sense that, you know, they got out of the group stage and they won today. So why fix something that's not broken? But they haven't been impressive playing the way they are playing. So can a change be good? You know, I actually can't answer that because if we're looking at it, you know, they did win the group stage. They got out. You know, they made the next – they won today. So they're winning, but are they playing impressive soccer? You know, are they playing convincing soccer? Are they playing like they're the best team in the world? No. So I don't know how to answer that because, yeah, they're winning, but they're not impressive. You know what? I saw a really funny tweet before I got on, and somebody said, this seems to be the U.S. motto, survive and advance. And that's exactly what I think they're doing. They're surviving and they're advancing.
Yeah,
but it's
that's
not
what
impressive.
They're doing. No, it's not. They're just keeping their heads above the water. Go ahead, Kardik.
I would
agree with that. Survive in advance is exactly what they're doing, and they're just keeping their heads above water. I think, again, I mentioned her, and I mentioned her on the Rabblecast a couple times today. I don't know where Heather O'Reilly is. I don't know what happened as she worked her way into Jill Ellis' doghouse. I know if Tom Cermonti was still the manager, she'd be playing, or she'd at least have more of a role than she has now. She's a player, I think, she's a very versatile player. She's someone who could change things up, and maybe you give her a run out against China, considering you're going to have two suspensions in that midfield. But other than that, the other option would be to play Christian Press out on the wing instead of Tobin Heath. I think there's a lot of quality and worker-like qualities that Tobin Heath brings to that midfield that Christian Press isn't going to give you. Now, she's quicker, she's faster on the wing, and she could probably get forward and score goals like she did. She did score a goal in this World Cup already against Australia. But I'm not sure that there's that especially as you get into the latter rounds and you're going to be playing better midfield. China doesn't have much quickness, but they're well organized. And then in the Germany or France game, you're going to be playing a really good midfield. You're going to be playing a midfield that's good, if not better, than our midfield, either one of those opponents, that you make that change. But O'Reilly is a possibility, and I suppose there's some other options potentially that you could play at the back. Well, the back line I don't think needs to be fiddled with. I mean, the other option would be to throw LaRue in there instead of Abby Wambach. Play LaRue
I was
and Morgan,
waiting
but
for somebody to bring up LaRue.
Yeah, I guess you could do that, right? I mean, that would kind of change the way you play, but you have a lot of quickness if you had both Sydney and Alex on the pitch.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree as well. I think you need – and the thing about LaRue is that, I mean, she can play down the flank very well, even though she is a forward, but she can definitely be maybe a little bit withdrawn, bringing up the ball with service to Morgan, to Abby, if you give her that opportunity. If you want to make it like a 4-3-3, you could put LaRue in the midfield, and she can be like that in-betweener where she can bring up the ball, and she can still attack – the area, and she can still deliver some very potent crosses into the middle of the field if you want to do that. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Amy Rodriguez can do that job. Amy Rodriguez can do that job also. The only difference there is that she hasn't proven that she can score big goals at the international level. She scored once against Italy in our kind of knockout qualifier a few years ago, which was a very important goal. But other than that, I think I would favor LaRue over Rodriguez in that situation.
I agree, and I really like LaRue as a player. I think she hustles. I think she kind of is not afraid to go after the ball and really make smart plays. And I think when she's on, she's very on. You know, she's.
Yeah.
I think she's been very confident leading up to this World Cup, so it was really great to see. And I would really love to see her mixed in there in the next game. And I think she's going to be a huge asset moving forward for the United States. So getting her some more minutes would definitely be a smart idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think she's definitely an option. As I mentioned, Amy Rodriguez, maybe not as good an option, but still an option. There are things you can do if the determination is made that Abby is misfiring and maybe you need to make a change. But honestly, I think that U.S. soccer and Jill Ellis and everybody's so invested in this being Abby's last World Cup, and this is the trophy she hasn't won, that I just get the sense of we're going to ride her until we're out, basically.
And
yeah,
I think
and
that's the
also,
one thing that can't happen, guys. Go ahead, Paulina.
Yeah, to me, a really big changing moment for this World Cup for this U.S. team, and I think it's going to show moving forward, is that goal by Alex Morgan. I think it gave her a little bit more confidence coming off this injury, and I think that is exactly what Alex needed. She needed that goal, I think, for herself and just for the rest of the games moving forward. You know, she is back and she's healthy and she's ready to play and she's ready to put in that service to the U.S. So when she scored that goal, I think I was really happy for her, and I think, you know, she was very relieved as well. So I think we're going to see a lot more of Alex Morgan in the next few matches.
Yeah, I
yeah,
definitely
and she's always very
Alex
positive.
Yep.
Absolutely. A little last point on her. She, and I know I've said this before, and I'm not trying to draw the contrast necessarily with Hope Solo, who we know has issues. But Alex Morgan is such a positive person. She's such a positive player when she's on the field, in the dressing room, when I've interacted with her as a journalist. She's very different than the typical athlete you cover. And I think just getting her off the mark, there's this rallying effect. And she's so into helping her teammates. Now that she's off the mark, now that confidence is back coming off the injury, I think that's a big boost psychologically for the entire U.S. team, not just for her, but for the entire team.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, and definitely. The one thing, though, and I'll throw this out at you guys as well. We'll go Paulina first, and then we'll go to Cardick. But when you saw in that first half, Abby Wambach and Carly Lloyd, they're both in the same spot, fighting for the same ball, being crossed from the far side to the near. I don't want to start throwing, you know, what-ifs around, but, you know, did those two all of a sudden have a falling out? Are they fighting to be in the same spot for that same ball to put it in? I mean, I don't know what's going on. That was so strange, so weird. I'm hoping there's no falling out between these two, Paulina first and then Carter.
When I saw that, I literally just threw my hands up in the air. These are two seasoned players, veterans, leaders, so forth. So for this miscommunication to happen, to me it was a little bit mind-blowing, and I thought, had, you know, Abby called for the ball, or, you know, you let Abby take that ball, I think also. We could have seen a goal there. So, to me, I couldn't believe it. And hopefully we don't see it moving forward.
Yeah. In fact, it happened more than once. It happened twice. And it happened kind of a few minutes earlier. Carly Lloyd charged the space and then kind of backed off and let Abby get to the ball. But it happened twice in quick succession. And part of it was Carly Lloyd has been playing with no confidence. And we talk about Abby not playing well in this tournament and Alex Morgan not having much confidence before that goal. Carly Lloyd has been playing with no confidence. And I, that's why I think she took that penalty after Abby missed, because it was an idea. The idea was to get her off the mark, but she's been wanting something to go right, and it's just been odd from her. She's usually so perfectly positioned. She's this consummate box-to-box midfielder whose positioning is usually perfect. Her passing is good. She makes the late run at the right time, a lot like Frank Lampard in the men's game. I mean, very, very kind of similar player. And this World Cup, she's just been off the mark. She's been giving the ball away. I mean, half the time when I've seen bad giveaways in the Nigeria game and then now in the Colombia game, it's been her. The Sweden game, after Pia called her out, she played poorly in that game. I thought she was going to give a performance. So I don't know. There's something up there. And those are the two real veteran players. I mean, obviously, we have players like Shannon Box that have been around longer. But these are the two real veteran core players that are still playing an important part in this U.S. Women's National Team. And just to see that happen twice in the first half was bizarre.
Yeah, it really, really was. Once again, everyone, this is the 46th Fire American Soccer Show. We are reviewing USA, Colombia in the Women's World Cup round of 16. It's their postgame show. Once again, I have Paulina Sterzelec and, of course, Carter Krishnar from World Soccer Talk. Guys, let's go to the statistics of this match. Let's go to the attempt side. Possession-wise, 53-47 percentage in favor of the United States. Attempts, 15-10 U.S. on target, 6-2 U.S., off target 8-4, but for Colombia they blocked 4 and the U.S. only got 1. I mean, it sounds like the United States, with their pressed offensive tactics, it seems like they had the better of the possession. They had the better of the offensive attempts. What would you say there, Paulina?
Yeah, no, I think that, like I said, they really impressed me in the first 5 minutes. I think Colombia kind of took it away for a little bit, and Colombia did have some really good moments. But overall, I think U.S. kept possession of the ball, especially in the second half after that goal by Morgan. I thought they played great, and they definitely controlled the game. But if you tuned in after that red card and didn't know Colombia was playing with 10 players, I don't think you would ever think they were playing with 10 players, because I think Colombia really hustled throughout that match, and, you know, they left everything on the field, but U.S. did keep possession for, you know, majority of the game. And after that Alex Morgan goal, I think they just kind of really gained their confidence back and were able to control it a bit more.
And Cardick, on the attacking end of things, 8-3 on the corners in favor of the U.S. The U.S. were offsides twice. Colombia wasn't. 24-12 on the free kicks for Colombia, and we'll get to that in a minute. The Colombian keeper made 4 saves, or the combined of the Colombian keepers made 4 saves, and Hope Solo only made 2. It just goes to show you, Cardick, as we've already said this, yeah, they didn't play well, but they still kept their heads above the water, and they found a way to get the result they needed, the U.S.
Yeah, that's certainly true, and survive in advance, as we said earlier. But Colombia, 7 team, and obviously did well in this World Cup. They should have beaten Mexico. They beat France, which is it's going to go down as probably the upset of the tournament. Although I guess now Australia, Brazil might rival it, but it's still Colombia beating France, which is a shocker. And I don't think we'll have a bigger upset than that in this tournament. And they played reasonably well against England. Against an England team that I like, that I've touted coming into this tournament. Other people haven't. They're still alive, but Colombia played very well against England also, particularly in the second half. And then they played well against us for large portions of the I thought we controlled the first 15 minutes, but then after that, they were pretty even the rest of the first half. And then our quality came through, obviously, at the end. But they were persistent. They were pretty good. And they've got a great future, because South American women's soccer is not very strong. A lot of these girls have to deal with machismo and sexism in their society, kind of looking down upon the women's game. They've risen above that, the Colombian women's team, and they made the World Cup in 2011, and they impressed people in 2015. So I think they're going to grow, and as we see Brazil on the downswing, it's very possible Colombia could emerge as the leading South American or Latin American women's soccer power. They certainly have a good young team, and this, the core of this team, there's nobody older than 26 or 27. So we're going to see the same team if they qualify for the Olympics next year, and then in 2019 in France.
Yeah, that should be a pretty interesting
very
situation.
Impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I thought Colombia was very impressive as well. They held their own. I thought, you know, I'll say this, Paulina. I thought the Colombians, they did match well against the U.S. They kind of did a little tit-for-tat on the U.S. when they had the possession. Once in a while, though, I don't know, that final ball for Colombia just did not seem to produce for them. I mean, they had many, many chances to attack. They just couldn't finish them well enough, and the U.S., when they got their chances, did.
Absolutely, and I think they also kind of just it's unfair to say that they ran out of energy and couldn't keep up with the U.S. because they were playing with 10 players for, what, 44 minutes or so? But I think they definitely took a backseat towards the end of the game. They couldn't finish some of those balls. And like you said, they're a very impressive team. I mean, they impressed me in 2015 in this World Cup. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing them come back and who they come back as a team. They did dance around the ball a little bit here and there. I thought they were really quick to try to get those fouls called. So, you know, definitely a lot to improve on from them, but they were a very, very impressive team. And it's going to be exciting seeing them grow and seeing them develop.
At Cardiff, let's go there for a second, the disciplinary committee, or at least in the disciplinary section of the stats. Fouls committed, 22-12, United States. Now, listen, I don't want to harp on the referees here, Cardiff. You know, I know they're trying their best, whatever, but let's be honest. I wish there were more women's professional soccer leagues all over the world so these female officials, on-field officials, can be game sharp as well when you're making proper calls. And unfortunately, there's not enough professional women's leagues in the world to help these women make the right call. I mean, half those calls. I mean, I saw maybe 3 to 4, maybe 5 fouls that should have been called on Colombia, and the main referee let it go. I mean, I saw at least two double teams. It was terrible.
Yeah, and we've had some very good women's officials here in the United States that have had to referee men's games because we've had these dips in having professional leagues between WUSA and WPS, and after WPS now NWSL. I mean, I know a couple of women's officials who had to go referee NWSL and USL games, did a lot of those games because they couldn't get enough women's games in. And then they're almost out of the pool for women's refereeing assignments because they're doing so many men's pro assignments, which actually pay more, too. I would point out you get paid more to referee an NASL game than you do an NWSL game. So that's a problem, at least here in the U.S. and Canada. I'm not sure around the rest of the world. I mean, I think clearly there are not enough women's professional leagues. We're seeing European leagues begin to take things more seriously. We're seeing, this is part of the reason I thought England was going to have a better World Cup this year, although they seem to make the quarterfinals every time and then flame out, so we'll see if they beat Canada. But their women's professional league has gotten pretty serious in the last couple of years. And you're seeing the level of their players, even though some of them are the same types of players, Jill Scott and others that we've seen in previous competitions for England, we're seeing their level increase because they're actually – they're not having to come to the U.S. to play anymore. They're getting to play at home at a pretty high level professionally. Same thing with France, same thing with Germany. I mean, Germany has been great for years, but same reason France has really emerged in recent years. So there are referees from those countries, but unfortunately the way FIFA does it, and we see this in the Men's World Cup, right? We always have this controversy during the Men's World Cup. They have to take from a certain amount from each confederation. And some confederations have no professional leagues. CONMEBOL has no professional women's leagues. Same thing with the African Federation. The Asian Federation, if you're not taking referees from Japan or China, you're taking amateur referees. You're taking bad referees. So that's a problem. And it's a bigger problem in the women's game than it is in the men's game. And it's a horrible problem in the men's game. So you can just imagine how bad it is in the women's game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree there, Paulina. I'm glad that I'm very, very happy that we are seeing some of these other nations, especially in Europe, they're taking the women's game a little more serious than they were before. It was always going to be China, Norway, and the U.S. Those are the only three nations that have taken it seriously. Now we're looking at Sweden.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at Germany. I think that Olympic tournament in England for the French women, for France, Paulina, I think that started their role to get taking this more seriously than everyone else has, and it's been great to see, especially the German women.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I agree with having to take, you know, X amount of referees from certain federations and how that could really affect the game, and I think it's just really unfortunate because then we do see some of these calls and the referees, you know, go yellow for it, but here everyone else is like, that was just a regular foul, and maybe it is because of, you know, inexperience and not being able to ref as many games. So I definitely think it's very unfortunate for the game that that's what has to happen, and it's great to see that other countries, you know, are taking the women's leagues a bit more seriously. I think, you know, it would do huge service to the United States alone. If, you know, the U.S. wanted, I think, bringing soccer within the women's league here, it still needs to, it's still on the rise. You know, you go into these games and you see the attendance and they deserve more fans in their seats. So it's still on the rise here. So it's great to see other nations kind of following suit, but there's still a lot that needs to be done to have such levels worldwide and to make sure, you know, women's soccer is taken seriously and, you know, more countries are getting involved.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Guys.
Yeah,
and,
the thing that's happened, I would point out in England, Germany, and France, who are, I mean, you nailed it, Daniel. I mean, when you look back at the 99 World Cup, it was us and China and Norway that were really taking it seriously. I mean, and everybody else, it was a bit passé. I mean, some of these cultures are machismo, sporting culture, and some of these places very sexist. And finally, we're getting past that in a lot of places. But in England, I can tell you the FA has made it a priority for the big clubs. And for the big clubs, I mean, the Chelseas, the Arsenals, the Manchester Cities. Manchester United, not really. I mean, they should be also, but those three clubs in particular, Liverpool also, those four clubs, to really, since they have so much money that they generate from the men's game, put some money back in the women's game because England realizes they probably have a better shot of winning something in the women's game than they do in the men's game. They're never going to win anything in the men's game again. I think, you know, if you're realistic, you know that. So you see in the England team, you see the improved play. Someone like Karen Barnsley, who is American and grew up in California. She's gotten to play for Arsenal and now for Manchester City. Steph Houghton, who's their captain, same thing. And you see their levels of play improving through the years. And I've watched a lot of these the girls who play for England very closely as they've evolved and their league has gone from being an amateur league to a semi-professional league, now to a fully professional league with the big clubs behind it. And it's really paid off. And France and Germany were actually ahead on that. What this means for us in the United States is we can't rest on our laurels. We cannot continue to go through these situations where pro leagues come and go and our women's players are having to find various places to play. They're having to play in amateur leagues. They're having to play in the W League, things like that. We have to find a long-term solution professionally for our players, or alternatively send our entire national team to Europe, which I don't think is preferable. I don't think that that's something we want to do, but in order to keep up with Germany and France and as England emerges and some other of the countries emerge, we were the leaders in this sport, and we've been caught because other countries have made a commitment to it. Now we have to double down. I know NWSL, the thought process is, because the World Cup's in Canada, we're building towards 2015. I don't know what the future of the league is after this year. Portland's doing very well attendance-wise. Western New York does okay. Kansas City does okay. But I don't know if the commitment will be there from U.S. Soccer to continue to fund the player contracts of our players, the players that are American national team players, and the Canadian Federation to continue to fund Canadian national team players in the league, like Christy Sinclair. I hope it's there, because if we lose that, we're going to fall further behind Germany and France in particular.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the one thing. If the girls for the U.S., if they're going to keep on showing that our national team is the best in women's soccer, I mean, they're going to have to keep on fighting, keep on attacking, and keep on going at it, because it's too easy right now because everyone has caught up. And I think that's a positive sign if you're looking at the world game for the female athletes, Paulina, that finally the rest of the world is starting to catch up. There's still some here and there that are going to poo-poo it, unfortunately, like South America, as Karthik has said already. But hopefully Colombia has shown, I think Brazil has shown, that they can play. They can play this game like the boys do, and they're just as good as they are.
Right, and I think what's important that you said there is, you know, the rest of the world is catching up, so we can't stop now and we can't take a step back. Is there going to be a women's league next year? You know, we can't even question that. If the rest of the world is catching up, we need to keep going with full force ahead, and I think the commitment from U.S. soccer just needs to be there for our team, because it's not ideal to send our whole national team overseas. We need the commitment here, and I think in general we need the commitment from U.S. soccer here to help grow this sport as well, and, you know, inspire the next generation of American women who are going to take the reign once, you know, these legends retire. So this is not the time for, you know, U.S. soccer to slow down with its commitment to the Women's League. I think it's just time to kind of step on the gas and really maybe reinvest isn't the right word, but to kind of keep moving forward and making sure we get what we do what needs to be done to keep this alive, especially if the rest of the world is catching up.
Absolutely. But going back to this Women's World Cup, guys, the quarterfinals are almost set. We got one more quarterfinal matchup in this Women's World Cup, and that will take place tomorrow on Tuesday, June 23rd. Japan will host the Netherlands. And, of course, the winner of that match will take on Australia. I mean, that's a shocker that Australia. I mean, I thought that they were going to be one of those teams that are going to get eliminated early in the group stage, Karthik, but you know, that big draw against Sweden, especially the big win over Nigeria in the group stage, that was a huge moment for the Sheilas, as the Australian women found a way to be one of those third-place finishers and advance into the next rounds. And now they're going to the quarterfinals to wait either Japan or the Dutch.
Yeah, we all knew about Lisa Devanna coming into this tournament. We've known about her for years. She was a big star in 2011. But the rest of this team has been really kind of resourceful. They've won our hearts the way Australia's men's team has. I mean, there's something about the Australian ethos in this sport, because they're always the underdog, right? We don't think of soccer. I mean, you think soccer's foreign to Americans? It's even more foreign to Australians. They've been good in this tournament, and they might get a crack at the defending champions at Japan, assuming Japan gets past the Netherlands. The Netherlands were a team, those of you who read World Soccer Talk, you know, I thought that they were going to be the sleeper team, the surprise team, that they'd come through European qualifying, that they had a young team, they were getting better. I liked what I saw in that first game against New Zealand. Since then, it's been a bit of a struggle for them. So, but they still got through to the knockout stages, and let's see, they've got a shot against Japan. Japan is so efficient, though, so Japan has got experience now. They might be at the down end of their run, their cycle, but they're still the world champions, and they're the world champions for a reason. And they took us to the limit in the Olympics. Also, they could be the reigning Olympic champions too. So they've got the organization too. The tactical knowledge to not break down, and Japan won't concede a lot of goals. So that will be an interesting game. But then, you know, if you look to the quarterfinals, it's just obviously France-Germany stands out as the game. But our game against China, we're going to have to play a little better. I think we'll win, but we're going to have to play better in the midfield. The game between England and Canada is going to be something else. And then if it's Japan and Australia, that's going to be a real knockout-type match as well. So I think what we're seeing is that this expansion of the tournament to 24 teams, which I was concerned might have happened too soon, and maybe we're going to have there are going to be games that are not competitive. As it turns out, this knockout stage has been great to this point, with the exception of the Germany-Sweden game, where Sweden, where Pia just she couldn't figure it out tactically, and they got run over. But it actually has worked. The women's game is strong enough now globally that you can have a 24-team World Cup and maybe even push to 32 in 8 to 12 years because there are enough good teams, and there's been no drop-off in quality. And as I look at the quarterfinal matchups or the potential matchups, depending on whether Japan or the Netherlands win, I'm saying this is the same level of quality as the men's game. I don't see any real drop-off. The matchups are just as intriguing. You're not getting these weak teams deep in the tournament that we were concerned about with the expansion to 24. So it's been a great World Cup, and I think the women's game continues to improve. It's been a great World Cup minus the turf.
That's very true, yeah.
I don't want to sound like Abby, but I don't want to make excuses like Abby is. But I agree with Abby on the issue. I just don't think she should be excusing her own poor play because everybody's having to play on the turf. She's not the only player out there playing on turf. Everyone is, so on every team. But it's been a great World Cup minus the turf, and it's an even better World Cup than the World Cup in Germany, which was even better than the World Cup in 2007. In the men's game, we see like these dips in these. I mean, I don't think the 2014 World Cup was very good, personally. Mm-hmm. But in the women's game, we continue to see every tournament, every time out, the level gets better, and that's something very positive.
Absolutely, and finally, of course. Paula, I'll let you comment on this. Apparently, Michelle Akers' Twitter has been up and running rampant. She goes, OMG, U.S. versus Colombia, better get our together.
I didn't even see that.
Yep.
How did I miss that?
I don't know. I'm following someone that retweeted it, so there it is, folks. OMG, U.S. versus Colombia. There's no FCC here. Forget it. Oh, my God, U.S. versus Colombia, better get our shit together. That's what she said. There's no FCC license here. We can say whatever we want.
Well,
wow.
If Michelle is telling you to get your shit together, you better get your shit together.
Well, that's Michelle.
Because if somebody knows about playing in a World Cup, it is Michelle. I mean, my heart breaks for her and having to get knocked out, you know, in 99 by Brianna and having to miss the penalty kicks and miss that overtime because of everything she worked for, telling you you need to get all your stuff wrapped up and together for the next few rounds. You better listen to Michelle because she is definitely one of the people who paved the path for this team, and she's a legend here, so... You listen to Michelle.
That's one of two women's players in history that has made the FIFA 100 list. And the other 98 are men. There are two women on the list. One is Michelle Akers. So members of the current U.S. team, you better heed that. You better. I was going to use an expletive myself. You better freaking listen to her.
You better freaking listen to Michelle because. When Michelle talks, people listen. That's right, Jill Ellis. You got to listen to Michelle Akers right now. I don't care if you're up in Canada at the moment.
By the way, when Julie Foudy talks, people listen also. And that's something that Hope Solo needs to remember. Speaking of Twitter, I hope she doesn't get into another Twitter fight with Julie Foudy because those of us who love this sport and have been around this sport for years will always take Julie Foudy's side. That includes, and I'm talking about myself. Hope Solo better just behave herself.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think you question any of the five, to be honest, from Mia, Joy, Brandy. Don't question any of those.
Yeah, this happened about 2 years ago when Hope Solo called Julie Foudy on Twitter an old fogey. You don't know what you're talking about. And I wasn't the only one. I think about 99% of us were out there saying, what the F is wrong with Hope Solo? Yeah, she's our goalkeeper. She's great. But we know there's something wrong with her. Why would you say that about Julie Foudy?
See, this is how I rank Michelle Akers and Julie Foudy when it comes to when they talk, you listen. I'm not saying you shouldn't listen. You should listen to them both. But Michelle Akers is like, you know, like the hard-nosed neighbor who's going to yell at you, even though they don't like you. But you better listen to what they have to say because it's great advice.
Yeah.
Julie Foudy is like Mrs. Rogers. I have to say it. She's like Mrs. Rogers. She does it in a nice way. Oh, but you got to make sure. You got to do this. No, Julie. Julie needs to probably go Stone Cold Steve Austin, open up a big keg, and just pick the whole thing up and drink and guzzle down the beer. That's what Julie Foudy needs to do, but that's just my opinion.
I mean, if I was any of those girls and I was reading Michelle's tweets, I'd be like, well, listen, we need a click because we do. You said we could beat China. You're not too worried. Or somebody said that we could beat China, not too worried. I think we could beat every single country that's left in this World Cup. It's just a matter, it's not a matter of what everyone else is going to do. It's a matter of what we're going to do. You know, if what team is going to step out on that field on Friday? Is it going to be a team that's going to click? Is it going to be the team that everyone kind of expected to see in the group stages? You know, this is the U.S.'s World Cup. Leading up to it, that's all you kept hearing. This is the U.S. World Cup. They're going to win. Sydney even said, you know, second place. No one here is going to be even satisfied with that. It's the gold medal or nothing. And I think this team can beat everybody that's left. It's just a matter of what team is going to come out on that field. So if a few tweets from some legends, you know, light a little fire under their behinds, then so be it. But it's going to be a great, great World Cup in the next few days.
Yeah, and you don't question those legends. I mean, just to close out this discussion, the tweets in question were about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. It was maybe early 2013. And I was just appalled that Hope Solo basically tweeted back at Julie Foudy, like, you know, who are you? You don't play anymore. Who are you to criticize me? I mean, just take the advice of your elders. Of course, if there would be one person in this current U.S. team that wouldn't take that advice, it would be her. So I guess we shouldn't have been surprised. It was just like Julie Foudy was really put out about it. The next time we saw her on air on ESPN, she's like, what is wrong with Hope Solar?
Exactly.
Constructive criticism. I mean, I want the U.S. team to win. I wasn't trying to be nasty. I was just saying, hey, you know, there's some things you need to do different.
Right.
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of those things. Before we got some time left, though, let's quickly take a look at some of these quarterfinals. We already talked, you know, let's be honest, USA really needs to fix their problems if they want to defeat China. Of course, the winner of that match will face either the Germans or the French. And Cardick, let's just quickly preview that. I mean, this sounds like this is going to be a knock-em-out, drag-em-out fight between the Germans and the French. And whoever the USA, or if the U.S. does beat China, whoever they face, I mean, this could be a real dangerous tie.
Yeah, I wonder if France would have been better off finding a way to finish second in the group. They didn't want to finish third because they would have played the U.S. Finish second, get Norway, then get Canada, and make their way through that way. Because it ended up being goal difference, which they beat England on. Had they scored, I think, one or two less goals against Mexico, they would have finished second, and England would have been forced to play Germany in the quarterfinal. So as it stands, France, with that loss to Colombia, having to face a German team that has looked invincible in this tournament. But Germany has played in a weak group. They didn't finish their chances against Norway. And I thought Pia, who I love, I mean, I loved her as our manager, got it all wrong tactically. I mean, the Germans pressed Sweden up high. Sweden was trying to play long balls out of the back. They were giving the ball up, and they were giving Germany lots of opportunities and quick, you know, quick turnovers. France has a really good midfield. Nassib is a player I like a lot. She had gone off the boil when she was subbed out against Colombia. They sat her against Mexico. She was back in the team against South Korea and played very well. Tomis is a player I like a lot. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm going to pick Germany just because they look better. But I don't know. I mean, coming into this year, I thought France was the team to beat. Then they really took it to us in a friendly. We got the better of them in the Algarve Cup. But I still think maybe France gets past this game. Whoever wins is the favorite to win the tournament. But it's almost a shame we're seeing this game in the quarterfinals. We're kind of early for a game like this.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Pauline. Your opinion about this quarterfinal matchup?
I actually have to agree. It is a huge game that we're going to see this game. So early on, if I have to go with a side, I would definitely here choose Germany. But it's going to be very interesting just to watch that game and see how they both kind of prepare for each other.
Absolutely. The other quarterfinal matchup, and obviously we always talk about England, USA, 1776. Let's also not forget that Canada is a former Commonwealth of England as well. And they're going to be – the English and the Canadian women are going to face each other in this quarterfinal matchup. I think this might be the first time – I could be wrong – but I think this might be the very first time that the English and the Canadians are going to face each other. And, Paulina, we'll go with you first. How do you see this matchup in this quarterfinal tie?
You know, I think Canada is definitely going to take this. They're playing on their home turf. They have a huge, support behind them. And I think they're going to take this match. To me, a player that I really love watching on the Canadian side is Kaylin Kyle. I think she's a great player, and I'm really excited to watch her play. But I do think they're going to move on to the semifinals at the very least.
And Cardick?
I'm going to keep riding England. Maybe it's because I'm familiar with the team. This is going to be really cool because it is a former colony. There's been a lot of support for England. There's a lot of residual support for England and Canada. And again, you know, it's the same situation as in the U.S. where the Premier League is really popular. So people watch the English team. We got this when England played the U.S. in the men's World Cup a couple of years ago, where there were a lot of Americans who were rooting for England just because they were more familiar with the players on the England team. There has been some residual support for England in this World Cup. That will come to an end, obviously, when they play Canada on Canadian soil. I like the England team. They're deep. I think, like today, for example, Jill Scott coming on for Kirby was a good substitution. Steph Houghton has been really good at the back. I think as the tournament has gone on, you've seen some different combinations of players that Mark Sampson's using. He's a very young coach. Tony Duggan is a very accomplished striker. You could see Aluko maybe come on and stretch the pitch. I thought in the post-Faye White, post-Kelly Smith era that there might be a dip for England. But as it turns out, because of the professionalization of their clubs, like I was talking about earlier, they've now got all these professional players, which they didn't have before. A lot of the players came here to play, or they came here to play college, and then they play in the W League, and they end up on the England national team. Now they've got a fully professional team. I think they're going to get by Canada. Then they'll run out of luck. They'll probably play Japan, and Japan or Australia and run out of luck. That side of the draw is much more accessible. And it's, again, France may have been better off finishing second in the group and just, you know, they probably would have gone all the way to the final for sure on that side.
I just
don't see Canada getting knocked out in this stage yet. I think there's a little bit more left to this Canadian team. So for me, it would be too early of an exit for Canada.
And, of course, Cardiff, we're going to have to
see. Yeah, I agree. You never want to see the host get knocked out. Oh, I was going to say, you never want to see the host get knocked out early. And when Germany got knocked out by Japan last time in the quarterfinals, and, I mean, Japan really took it to them in that game on German soil. It's like, wow, what next in this World Cup? But then Abby provided us with some moments that really made the World Cup so memorable. Of course, the Japanese won in the end, but
Abby, right.
Yeah, absolutely. And Clark, I was about to say, we're going to have to talk to Dwayne Rollins about that one, who's on the Canadian side of things up there with the soccer information. So who knows? We'll always get a good, colorful opinion from Dwayne when it comes to the Canadian side of things. But anyway, guys, listen, thank you so much for being a part of this. And, of course, the United States advancing to the quarterfinals will take on China on Friday, June the 26th, and that match will start at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. I believe it'll be on either Fox or Fox Sports 1. Check your local listings for the channel and time in your area. Paula Sterzelek, thank you so much. Carter Krishnar, thank you so much. Have a good night, guys. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for calling in, listening in. And as always, enjoy your football. We'll talk to you Tuesday, early afternoon, around noontime, for Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Bye-bye for now.